Herzlich willkommen zum On the Way to New Work Podcast. Ich bin immer noch in Lissabon im House of Beautiful Business. Bin hier zu Gast, darf hier Podcasts aufnehmen, habe vorher einige vereinbart und geplant und habe jetzt eine Zufallsbegegnung. Ich habe gestern Millie Baring kennengelernt. Herzlich willkommen. And I switch over to English now. And Millie, we met yesterday for the first time after the talk of Jessica, I think. And I could then explain that Jessica was a guest in my podcast as well. And then we met again today and had a very nice conversation. And within the conversation, I have the feeling to ask you if you want to be guest in my podcast. And you said?
Yes.
Yes. So, as I mentioned before, my first question is always, or our first question is always, how did you become the person you are today?
It's a very, very good question. It's a lovely way to get someone thinking about the journey of where they, how they got to be where they are. I'll try to be short. I'm not very good at that. I spent a lot of my childhood thinking about why. Why are we here? What's the point? What do I want out of life? And I grew up in a very loving environment, but there was a lot of conflict, and my parents were divorced when I was very young. And I think that had a big impact on how empathetic I became. So one of the biggest drives that has taken me to be who I am is to do with not making mistakes that other people have already made, trying to learn from other people's mistakes so that I can try and get my life right. And I think I was inspired a lot by my mother, who had put so much into being my mother that I wanted to reward her by getting my life right, by living well and being a happy person. And so I went with my gut instinct quite a lot. I rebelled later after I had grown up. I was supposed to be the good one. And I threw the rule book out of the window when I finished school. And I started saying,
yeah,
no, I don't want to go to university, or no, I don't want to get a sensible job and a mortgage. And my poor mother was there going, oh God,
please. You were so good at school.
Yes, I thought you were going to have a degree, maybe even a master's. And instead I quit university and went to music college and studied jazz, singing and piano for a couple of years. And I learned through that I was only happy when I was really learning and I was with people who loved what they were doing. And I didn't have that at university. It felt like a stepping stone because I was supposed to be there. And then I started trying to figure out what I wanted to do and who I wanted to be, and didn't become immediately obvious. So I went through.
How did you do so? Did you have a, let's say, a book which helped you, or friends, or did you do this on your own?
Gosh.
I mean, this question is for many people. I'm 54. I asked me myself for the first time, really, when I was much older than you. I remember 20 years ago that there was a book what I was reading where there was such kind of question, oh, how do you want to be recognized when you're dead? And I had then somehow an idea, but I would say I started 5 years ago with 49 to find out, and you were younger, so it's interesting.
I was. Gosh, it's a really good question without an answer. I don't know. It was almost instinctive.
Yeah.
I don't think I read any books. I read a lot. I literature was my thing as a child, and I loved classical studies. I studied classics and English, mm-hmm. and theater. And maybe it was the combination of all the stories, all the inspiration, all the possibilities, and I hungered for something more than what was in front of me. I think I was driven for a long time by a sense of emptiness, a hunger for something, which, and I didn't know where I belonged because we'd moved around. I was looking for where I belonged. I was looking for...
So you're born in France?
Born in France, yes. Mm-hmm. Moved to England when I was 5, and then we moved around a bit and settled in the south, and then I moved to London when I was 18. Sort of accidentally, I suddenly turned around and realized I didn't live at home anymore. And And then I moved a lot. I went from music college into film music, and I worked for an incredible person who was a film composer, a difficult but incredible person. And I thought that I wanted to support somebody amazing. I wanted to be a PA. I was his PA. And I thought, this is it. I want to support somebody wonderful who is creative, because I'm an organized person. I always call myself a creative person trapped in an organized person's body. So I can organize him so he can create.
did not feel right.
I suspect you already know the complexities that come by trying to live vicariously through somebody else. And of course, I then quickly realized that nobody else was going to live up to my expectations. They had to be perfect if I was going to commit my life to their work. They had to be exceptional. And everyone has their flaws, I suppose. So I moved from that into wine, and I decided I wanted to learn how to make wine. And I was flitting between creative things, mm-hmm. looking for my outlet. Mm-hmm. And I loved that. I started making wine in Bordeaux and in Australia. And I found incredible wineries that sort of adopted me and wanted me to carry on working for them every season. And then in between, I was free to do things like illustrating. I did an illustration diploma and started doing children's illustrations. And it was a sort of perfect life. I was chasing the sun as well. So I was going from summer in England to summer in Australia. But again, I wasn't quite sure where I belonged, and I knew it wasn't sustainable. And around that time, the place I now look after came into my life. It's an island near Dublin called Lamb Bay, and it belonged to my great grandparents and then my grandfather. And I used to go there when I was a kid. I used to go and visit my grandfather, and we'd spend these incredible summers on this magical island. It's full of history, and it's built on a love story, and it has pirates and saints and monks in its history, and shipwrecks. And
but there do not live people regularly, or is there?
Just six of us lived there permanently.
Okay.
So there was always somebody there.
Okay.
For a long time, it was some cousins of mine. And I just didn't know about it after my grandfather died. I didn't know it was still there. I was seven, and I didn't question what happens to an island after your grandfather dies. And so I was 21 when I found out it was still in the family. And we visited, my sister and I visited, and it was identical. Nothing had changed. It was like being seven again.
Wow.
Thrown into my childhood. And that was a sort of lovely experience. And we went away thinking, gosh, how amazing. I can't believe it's still there and we can visit. And a year later, we were informed it was going to be sold and that there was no money left. And it was at that point that I realized to ask the question of who does it belong to? And I found out it was ours. It's in trust, but it was our responsibility and our privilege to.
So no one could have sold it without your okay.
We had to be told.
Okay,
We had to be told, and then
you said no.
We said no.
Yeah.
We had a vote. There's about 150 potential beneficiaries. It's a discretionary trust, so the majority said if anyone is willing to try, we would rather you did, and we'd like to carry on visiting, because it turns out many of my cousins come every year and always had. So my brother stepped up and said, okay, I'll go and live there and I'll try and make it viable. My father had been spearheading this extraordinary initiative, but he was a bit of a black sheep in the family. So the rule number one was don't let James Baring get his hands on the island, because he'll do something crazy and it'll go wrong. So my brother was a much less controversial character, and the family went, okay, he seems reasonable, we'll take him. Mm-hmm. But my dad really spearheaded it, and after quite an arduous battle to save it, there were some people who didn't want us to save it. My dad checked himself into hospital and promptly passed away a day after the final meeting.
Oh, no.
It was very in character. everything he did in life was quite sort of organized and rational. And he'd been telling us for quite a long time that he had reached and surpassed his intended age design limit, and that it would be absurd to worry about it. Wow. So he secured Lambay, and he said, right, my work here is done. Goodbye. And my brother, bless him, found himself living on an island without his main backer, the guy who was supposed to sort of help him decide what to do, without his fiancée, who promptly moved back to South Africa because she did not want to live on an island in Ireland. And so he rang his little sister and said, Millie, little help. Yeah. And I said, no, I'm making wine in Australia. Leave me alone. but I started helping here and there. And this has become a lot longer than I meant it to be, but
that's so interesting. That's good.
It was one of those journeys where I turned around and I went, ah, this is where I'm meant to be. But I took a long time to make sure it was the right decision, because I knew if I did it, it would be all in. And I think there was a big part of my brain that knew once I had managed a private island and started creating something around it, you can't go back from that, which is an amazing thing, because it means I cannot fail. There isn't an option to not achieve this and get this right, because what would I do with myself after this? I honestly don't know. So I threw myself into it, and I came up with what I thought was the best way to reflect the island and to help it survive. And that was to share it with people who were going to benefit from this extraordinary magic that is on the island. So I set up a club. I set up a members club for extraordinary people.
And the clubhouse is on the island?
And the clubhouse is on the island. It's informal. It's a guest house. Mm. We curate the weekends and retreats that sort of set the tone for the year, and we invite people out to be part of that. And it's very much about the connections that are made on the island when you step onto this place together, and you've been on a boat together, and you suddenly go, gosh, we have so much in common, even though we don't know each other. And it opens up the space to be safe, and people are so honest on Lambay. They talk about things that they would never talk about if they met in a conference or even in a pub. And that's the magic that made me very excited and fulfilled a deep frustration in me I had always felt, which is, why aren't people honest with each other? Why don't they tell the truth? Why don't they open up to each other? And I've learned with time that it's obviously mainly fear that stops people doing that at first, but it's also just not being given the right environment. Just like the House of Beautiful Business, you're given a space to express yourself, a safe space, exactly. And it was all really organic. At first, I wanted it to be tech people meeting creative people, because I wanted to cross the disciplines and see what magic lies in the intersections there. And then gradually, I realized that it was bigger than that. It was about connecting people from all the industries and giving them that opportunity to be something bigger, because you can only get so far if you're only talking to people in your industry. As soon as you start to cross-pollinate, the possibilities become limitless almost. So I went with that. It was pure instinct. I went, okay, I'm just going to listen to the people who are joining me in this, whatever this is, and then I'm going to shape it around them. And it evolved and evolved. It kept changing, and I kept sort of going, I don't quite know what my mission statement is. Some people seem to get it without me being able to explain it very well. So I'm just going to keep doing that.
Can you explain it now?
Now, yeah. I think so. And I think only sort of this year, it's been going for 4 years. And one of my facilitators in the group runs a writing retreat, and he forced me to join in some of the, not force, but encouraged me to join in some of the workshops. And he made me work on my mission statement. And I haven't got the one sentence, but I know that it's about bringing people back to a place where they are focusing on the planet, focusing on themselves, and focusing on the community. So you're looking after those three things. And if you look after those three things, everything else works out. Everything else becomes healthy. And you cannot have a good life if you're not looking after yourself and the people around you and the planet that we all rely on. So it's about reconnecting, definitely.
You will find the right one sentence. Even if not, I mean, the way you're describing it, I think everyone gets it.
Yeah.
And I can take it goosebumps because I can feel that this is strong and that you have, we didn't talk upfront about your events that we will do now, but I can feel that this creates an atmosphere where magic can happen, really. How was the first event? How did it start? How many members do you have now? And what are your plans now? I've learned that you are here for a collaboration with Tim and his team. Yeah.
Yes. So they.
Is it just people from Ireland, or is it from all?
No, all over. So I was very keen to break the boundaries and get people from different countries, people from different continents, very much people from different disciplines, backgrounds. All of these things that Lambay transcends. As soon as you come there, it doesn't matter. None of those things matter. And
how do you come with a boat? Or?
Yes, mm-hmm. Boat. If you're rich enough, you can come in a helicopter. But mainly,
have a helicopter.
We don't have a helicopter.
But you have a place where
you can land. Yes, yeah, yes. Yeah. We've had a couple of rogue helicopter landings, which has been great. But there's also an airstrip if you're brave enough to do a grass strip landing. But need the right plane for that. The first gathering I did was for my committee, a group of extraordinary.
So your first idea is I need a committee which helps me to cure you, to get feedback, sounding.
Yes, to find
what the first people you said I want first this people.
Yes.
And then need them or use them to get the idea right.
Yes.
Yeah, cool. So a collaborative approach.
Exactly. Yeah. And when at first I thought that they were going to be the people who would find me the amazing members through their networks. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And this ended up not working at all.
Okay.
But what they ended up doing was mentoring me and very, very well and supporting me. So they said, we don't know exactly what you want to do, but we really like you and we think there's something here. So keep talking to us and we'll help however we can. And for a good year and a half, I think they were sort of quite frustrated because they were like, yep. How can I help? And I was going, I don't know. Damn it. but they stuck with me and they stuck with me. And eventually the people started coming to me through what I was developing with them. And then they were able to start spreading the word as well. So they all came out really just to understand Lambay. And then the first official event I did was actually about blockchain and cryptocurrency. My brother-in-law is sort of in the middle of the London scene of that. And I kept meeting people in blockchain separately and introducing them to each other. And it was sort of hilarious because I'm a creative, non-blockchainy person. And I looked back and I realized I'd introduced most of the key players in London to each other. And now they're in business together. They're running blockchain or cryptocurrency things. And I look back and they go, hey, how did we meet? We met through Millie, didn't we? And I'm there sort of laughing to myself, thinking,
wow, that's cool. Yeah.
Definitely not your likely candidate. but it was brilliant. And in fact, one of my committee members who knew nothing about blockchain before the weekend went away and raised 3.5 million British pounds for his for a game he had created through the blockchain. Based on a walk to the nose of the island.
Wow.
And a chat he had.
That's cool.
It was very cool.
and how many people do you have in this whole group now?
Now there's about 65. I, as part of my sort of rocky journey, last year I almost entirely gave up on the membership idea because the idea was that most members would pay a membership fee. That was the only way to make it viable. But I was really struggling with the fact that this was closing my audience to people who could A, afford it, or B, just justify it. Because there's something about spending money on a membership that is less justifiable than spending it on, say, a trip or a club weekend. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I was really struggling to find the balance between people who wanted to come to the island but mm-hmm. didn't want to pay their annual fee. They would pay to come. Mm-hmm. And so I nearly threw the whole thing in. And then, again, organically, I discovered through the members that I could have a three-tiered approach. So I now have patrons who are in a position where they want to contribute towards it. They believe in it. Mm-hmm. We run a very eco-friendly system. So the island's off-grid. We have solar panels and wind turbine, and we try to do everything as eco-friendly as possible. So they're paying in knowing that their money's going to go towards us doing hospitality in as green a way as possible. We have the facilitators who run their own retreats there, and mm-hmm. that's for the entire community and their friends and family and connections. And then we have ambassadors who are people who really enrich the community but can't necessarily afford to pay or don't have the right skill set to facilitate a retreat. Mm-hmm. And they bring people, they host dinners in London, they spread the word on the retreats. And that's allowed me to keep the community really organic and not shut anyone mm-hmm. out who mm-hmm. who should be in it.
Wow. And how many events do you do over a year?
Between 8 and 12. Mm-hmm. So we, at the moment, we have exactly half of retreats that are open to anyone who comes through a trusted channel.
Yeah.
And then the club weekends, which is strictly for club members and their connections. And that's the networking side and about building relationships.
So you don't advertise or anything. So it's just word of mouth. So if I'm lucky, you would say, Michael, yes, you can come.
I'll think about it.
and then I would become member and would behave nicely. And then I'd say, well, I have an idea. There's a nice couple on, it's a true story, in Palma, Mallorca. They do things like you do in Palma. I've just worked with them for and 30 other people at the Bikini Hotel. And we did something which is feels the same like what you write. And then you would say, okay, Michael, now you're a trusted channel and you can propose.
Exactly, okay. Yes. So you would say to me, I would very much like to be part of this club and I would like to join as an ambassador or as a facilitator. Mm-hmm. And then assuming you ticked all the boxes and behaved yourself, I would then officially make you mm-hmm. a member. And membership lasts for a year. There's no... you don't have to continue after that, but obviously most people do. But every year you have the choice to continue or to say, actually, I'm going to take a break. And your obligation is to then fulfill your role within that year as the ambassador, the facilitator, or mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. patron. And yes, we have a website, but I haven't SEO'd it, so it's hard to find unless you're looking for us. Mm-hmm. And I've done that very specifically because... I really believe in the power of connections mm-hmm. And not just paying for, well, we were talking about it earlier, not paying for your publicity, but letting it grow organically.
Yeah, interesting. And I mean, how, where from do you live? Is it enough what you can earn with this kind of events that you can live? I mean, nobody's paying you for taking care of the island of your
grandparents. We have not been paid for quite some time, but that is slowly changing.
Yeah.
Part of our job was to make the island a viable business so that it could survive, so that it could pay its own way. It's a very expensive thing to run an island. Yeah. Not least the taxes you have to pay just for the privilege of owning it. So every year we have a huge bill that we have to somehow cover in April. And then on top of that, you have the running costs. And even though we're off grid and a lot of our energy is renewable, maintaining that is expensive. We have a farm, so paying our farmers, maintaining the architecture, the usual things that come with running an estate, but then you have to add the boat costs on top of that. And just anything surrounded by water and your costs suddenly sort of triple. So it's a challenge. We probably, if we'd overthought it, would have been too scared to do it. But luckily we didn't overthink it. We just went, well, this is something that needs to be protected. I'll give it a go. I'll give it my best shot. And of course, in that business plan should include a salary for whoever's managing it. Obviously, we've been the last people to benefit. We did turn the island around from making a 200,000 euro loss a year to breaking even.
Wow.
So we're very, very pleased with ourselves. We've got a long way to go, but
so
yes.
Other people, let's say a tourist could stay there as well in their guest house?
Again, it has to be trusted contacts.
Okay.
So we do some corporate stuff, mm-hmm. which helps pay the bills, but they have to be somehow recommended. Mm-hmm. If they do find my website, it's normally because somebody's told them to look for it. Mm-hmm. If by chance they stumble across it without, then I normally have a meeting with them and an interview to make sure that they're the right kind of people. They have to be people who are not looking for a venue, but are looking for a place that's very specific to what they want to achieve with their team. And so far we've been really lucky. We've had some incredible teams who come out and just go away saying, this has changed everything for us.
Wow. How many people can stay there for a couple of days? How many beds?
If you take over the whole place, you can sleep 40, but that's
40. Wow.
That's with room sharing.
Mm-hmm.
There's 23 official guest bedrooms and mm-hmm. room for some staff. But we like to keep things to 10 to 12 people because that's where the magic
happens.
Yeah.
Cool. What was the best event you had?
Ooh.
Or the most inspiring for yourself, for your personal journey?
I'm not going to be able to answer that. They're all so different. They're so bespoke. It's the same as when somebody says, how much does it cost to come? I will not ask this question. No, but as in, there's no simple answer. Each visit is so bespoke and depends on the size of the group and what they're looking to achieve. But
maybe I tried in another way. Could you share some stories or experiences you had where you said, well, this is how I meant it. This is why I'm doing this.
Yes. Okay. That's probably it.
I like the story you already told that two people did a walk to the top of the island and came back and
made millions.
Yeah. But I think you have even more to offer.
Yes. Mm-hmm. How do I pick? My favorite thing is the relationships that come out of it. I know so many people who've gone back to London in particular, and then I get photos of them hanging out. And mm-hmm. they always send me photos when they meet up separately. It's look, I'm with so-and-so. And people who've become such close friends and do a lot together from it and have done business together and mentored each other. For me, that's how I know I'm doing the right thing. My favorite thing is creating that space and then stepping back and watching. So I'm gregarious and I love making people laugh, but I like setting the scene and then sneaking away into the kitchen and helping the chef, and watching people come alive in that scene is where I know I've got it right for me. There's so many different things. There's the foraging. There's the Lambe Games is an amazing one, actually. I should tell you about that. It was designed by my first ever member who, on the same night he signed up to be the first member of the club, he also asked me out on a date. And we've been together ever since. I hadn't seen his application. I wouldn't normally fraternize with the members, but I hadn't seen his application in time. And he designed a weekend where it's mainly techies, it's entrepreneurial types. They get together, 10 to 12 of us, a few creatives, and they compete in hilarious games that are inspired by Lambe. So things like wildlife photography competition, the Lambe cocktail competition, race to the summit, bocce, and the list goes on. But it's all inspired by what can be achieved on Lambe and the history of what used to be played there as well. And it's hilarious. The laughter is endless for 3 days and somebody wins at the end based on a convoluted point scoring system that they created. And the friendships are unbreakable at the end of that.
Very nice. Very nice story. So now we're here at the House of Beautiful Business and you're here for a reason. Because you love to learn, because you love to be inspired, but I think because you're thinking about doing things together. So how could this happen, or what are your thoughts to this?
Yes, it's exciting because I came quite blind. Somebody had mentioned the House of Beautiful Business to me because they thought it had a similar ethos. So I looked it up, and I emailed them and I said I'd love to chat. We seem to have a lot in common, and I'd like to talk more. That was my agenda. And I had a wonderful hour-long phone conversation with Jamie Stetton.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, right, well, the first thing you need to do is come to one of our events, because even if you're going to run a Chambers on Lambay, you need to have been to our house. So I said, okay, fantastic. And I then didn't hear anything for a couple of months and emailed and said, I'm just checking in. I'd love to come. And she said, great. Oh, right. Yes. Okay. I need to sign you up. And this was probably only a week ago. And I was sort of worrying that I didn't know where it was, apart from in Lisbon. And so I got the information, but I'd missed all the emails. So I came very blind. I booked a somewhere to stay, happened to be just around the corner. I was very lucky and got the program and showed up. And, it's so much more than I expected. I'm definitely processing a huge amount. My brain is on overload, and but I know I'm in the right place for sure. There's exactly the kind of people here that I'm looking for, and they're the kind of people who benefit from that safe space that I want to create. So probably we'll start with Chambers. I'll run something that fits in with the general calendar, and then we'll take it from there. I think.
Very nice. We in our second conversation today, you told me or you asked me whether I was part of the session around lunchtime yesterday, and I was not because I was arriving later. And you described me what you learned there, and I would love you to do this again because it was so inspiring, and I think it is not just interesting for me.
It was extremely beautifully curated. I think that was the thing that I came away with. I was a bit late into the day as well, but I knew I wanted to go into that one. It just appealed. It was called The New Senses, and it looked suitably diverse. And I was already feeling quite emotionally charged, I think, going in. So many inspiring people, and so many questions that come up with that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I went in probably already thinking, oh, God, who am I? What am I trying to achieve? How? And we sat down and we had, I think it was 5 speakers, and they were so different. They were all so different, but they were, it was a beautiful journey. The first one was, her name's Moon Rebus. She's a dancer who put implants into her feet so that she could sense earthquakes around the world. So whenever there's an earthquake, her senses would vibrate in her feet, and the intensity would mirror the intensity of the earthquake. And she did that because she wanted to be more connected with the earth. And she started doing dances that reflected the vibrations. And she said she took them out 6 months ago, and she can still feel the ghost vibrations. So that was brilliant. She was so she was very funny, and she was really warm.
She was. Is it right that she was calling herself a cyborg?
A cyborg, yeah. Yes.
And there was this other story you have to tell.
Yes, she. She then they took it to another level. Her and her business partner put a tooth in. They both. I don't know whether they already had a gap or they took a tooth out, but they put in a Bluetooth tooth, and they were able to communicate by clicking the teeth and doing Morse code. And so they would be in a separate rooms, and they would be able to communicate with each other messages, which obviously sent their audiences into rapture. And they're doing all sorts. He's also got an antennae, apparently, an antennae sticking out of his head, which... for a while, people wouldn't let him into cinemas because they thought he was recording. And the antenna was made in Sweden. So he applied for Swedish citizenship because part of his body is now Swedish. So they're brilliant. They're really, pushing boundaries. And they're very joyful people. It was a lovely start. And that was followed by a much more serious conversation with Gabriel Jones, who has designed computers to augment surgeons, and in particular pediatricians. So he went through the statistics of how much money is spent on healthcare in America versus Europe, and then how much how many doctors they are going to be lacking. I think he said by 2030.
Mm-hmm.
It's very scary numbers. The fact that we're all living longer, there's more old people, and there's a complete lack of doctors for the amount of work. So he has created an amazing piece of machinery, robotics, that will allow people to do surgery from wherever, but way more accurate as well. They've reduced the amount of issues that could come from spinal surgery by a huge amount. So that was, again, a sort of very thought-provoking. Yeah. And that moved into David McCandless, who is a visual journalist. So he takes data and he makes it visual because he correctly saw how much easier it is for the human brain to understand things if we see it visually instead of looking at lots of numbers and figures. And he did a lot of focus on the financials of the world. And again, mind-blowing, but he was gripping and funny. And by this stage, our brains are going from funny augmented cyborgs to saving, you know, the doctors and the hospitals. So the other thing I forgot to say about Gabriel Jones, he talked about the pressure the doctors are under and what happens to their brain tension throughout surgery, which can go on for hours and hours and hours, and trying to protect them from things like X-ray problems. They get more cancer than anyone else because of their surroundings. And then into this this visual concept of the problems of the world, of the economies. And that was followed by Pauline Brown, who has written a book about the importance of aesthetics in business especially how we react, how humans respond so much to aesthetics and how important they are if you want to succeed and deliver a good product, which was kind of a good respite after something quite heavy. And she finally was followed by Dipti Mehta, who is an extraordinary Indian woman who came from absolutely nothing. She lived in a village in India where she was expected to get married and keep quiet and wear a veil. And she decided she didn't want to do that. And she broke tradition and she, using her own words, shamed her family by becoming an outspoken, successful woman. She went and did a PhD in America. She became a dancer, a writer. She does a podcast. And she told us, I found out afterwards, it was the first time she'd ever told this story publicly about how she'd nearly died when she was two by accidentally setting fire to herself with a sparkler. And she suffered such terrible burns that A, they thought she was going to die, and B, her wider family, especially the men, opted not to save her because they thought her life was going to be ruined. She'd never get married. She'd be too disfigured. And she made it through the night, and her mother put her foot down and said, no, I'm saving my child. And she's beautiful now. There's not a trace of a scar on her. She didn't explain whether or not she had to do anything to get rid of the scars, but she's absolutely stunning. And she decided to fight. And she has changed things beyond recognition for her community. She had everyone in tears. I mean, the whole room was sobbing by the end of it. It was
amazing. And what you mentioned, and what I can feel from your explanation, the curation to put this five little speeches or conversations under the roof of New Senses.
Yes.
Is what makes it good.
Absolutely. All of them. Dipti's title was Stories of Liberation. Mm-hmm. But actually, when you look back, they were all about liberation. They were liberating the mind, the senses, and looking at things in a new way. So I thought it was absolutely perfectly curated.
Amazing. Millie, you have other things to do. I'm so happy and so proud that you gave me 40 minutes of your time.
That's my pleasure. I feel like I've been talking endlessly, but that's probably the point, right?
And it is much more than 40 minutes because we met yesterday and we met during the day. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.